Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Emmanuel Macron, the president of France. Emmanuel Macron, writes the Telegraph London, has urged Ukraine's allies not to be cowards. Just days after refusing to rule out sending ground troops to Ukraine, we are surely approaching a moment for Europe, said the president, in which it will be necessary not to be cowards. He made this remark earlier this week while visiting the Czech Republic. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, who observes the Ukraine war and observes Europe from Washington, D.C. It is most helpful to understand how to regard the president of France. This is a man who's been in power some years, and early on in the conflict, if you'll recall, Emmanuel Macron was understood as something of a Putin whisperer. He was said to be much on the phone with Vladimir Putin, cajoling, convincing, charming, to change the direction of the war. There were visits to Moscow, as I recall. I think one in particular had that exorbitantly long table between them. However, now Macron is using the word cowards, and the presumption is, as of the moment, that this was directed against one particular leader in the European Union and NATO. That would be the Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz. Anatole, a very good day to you. This is several days since the remark was made. Your measure of this, are we looking at fresh friction in NATO, or has this always been there, Paris and Berlin? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. There's always been an element of that, but clearly this raises it to a new level. And it comes, you know, on top of several months of quite acute tensions between Germany and France over rearmament. I have to say I'm quite cynical about it. I can't help recalling when whoever it was, whichever European leader at the start of the Bosnia War declared, this is the hour of Europe, and, you know, Europe will intervene and end this dreadful conflict and stop the atrocities. Well, we know what happened, right? What happened was nothing, in some ways less than nothing, because some European troops, the Dutch on the ground, behaved appallingly. And, of course, America had to come in eventually with military force to end that conflict. The thing is, I think there are two reasons for Macron's statement, or suggestion. Because, of course, he didn't say that he's going to send French troops to Ukraine. He just sort of raised it as a theoretical possibility. The first is that if you read the news from Ukraine, and if you listen to, private military briefings in the West, it's becoming clear that the Ukrainians could be, it's not certain, but much closer to collapse than, we have thought previously. And that's partly, of course, because US aid has been held up, and partly because they're running out of men, and the men they do have are exhausted and old. So, Macron has been getting, I assume, the same briefings that the rest of us have been getting, we have to find some way of stopping the Russians unless we're prepared to open, peace talks to a considerable degree on Russian terms. But the other thing is, I have to say, for many years now, you see it in Britain as well, but in a somewhat different way. There has been this attempt by French leaders to basically posture on the world stage in order to present France and present themselves as still a great power and much more, you know, powerful than they actually are. And then, of course, Macron is, you know, doing very, very badly indeed in the polls in France. There is great fear in the French establishment that Le Pen and the, what do they call themselves now? Anyway, I still think of them as the National Front, will win the next French presidential elections 3 years from now. And so he's, you know, desperate to try to build up his domestic prestige. This, I think, is a miscalculation, because equally, if you look at French opinion polls, opinion is running by more than 3-1 against sending French troops to Ukraine. Because, as, you know, Putin and other Russian officials have warned, this would bring Russia and the West to the, you know, the very edge of direct war.
I mentioned the German component here because there is a party in Germany, Alternative for Deutschland, that takes the same position that other right-wing parties have taken, which is what's in it for us. They're not looking to continue the war in Ukraine. Olaf Scholz leads a coalition, as you know, that has committed itself to Zeitenwende since February of 2022. And yet, the reluctance to send Taurus missiles has made Olaf Scholz a center of debate about, is he for Ukraine or is he not for Ukraine? Olaf Scholz's poll numbers are, you mentioned Emmanuel Macron's, the Social Democrats' poll numbers, I'm told, are worse than anyone's, including Alternative for Deutschland. He's under a great deal of pressure. And then several senior officers of the Bundeswehr leaked, with no explanation possible, leaked through an open phone, a discussion about the French and British troops, trainers, contractors, who are deployed into Ukraine, associated with the Storm Shadow and the equivalent in the French arsenal, and talking about it might come to a Taurus missile with German trainers in Ukraine. This, of course, alarmed everybody for the security leak, but at the same time, are we going in that direction? Are we seeing again that the reluctance is replaced by sending the weapon? We've seen that from America for 2 years. Is that happening in Europe?
Well, yes, it is. You know, and after all, Germany has crossed line after line on that. We should remember that at the start of the war, Germany was talking about basically sending no military aid at all, and it has sent, you know, a considerable amount since then.
Yeah, they sent helmets. You remember that was their first deployment.
Yeah, but since then, you know, they've sent tanks, they've sent you know, missiles. They're not long range missiles. They've sent armored vehicles, but I think, I mean, what this brings out is that it's not enough to give weapons. This is a huge problem with the F-16s as well, and indeed with many of the sophisticated weapons, because you don't just hand over weapons of this kind to another army and say, now get on with it. It takes a long, long time to figure out how to use these weapons. And of course, it requires coordination with satellites, with intelligence, with command. And yes, I mean, if you want to bring these weapons into use reasonably quickly, you have to send your own people to train or even, it's been suggested, to operate the weapons. I mean, so far, with the possible exception of a Russian strike on this hotel in Kharkov, none of the Western soldiers in Ukraine have yet been killed, or if they have been, we don't know about it. But it would seem to be only a matter of time before that does happen.
The British, I follow that too, because we have founding members of NATO and critical economies in Europe all struggling. Germany's struggling with a possible recession. Italy's growing at 0.7 is the best they can do for 24. That's an estimate. France is not happy about where it is in production. And Britain is now dipping in and out of the threat of recession. The government in London has been consistently in support of Ukraine since the beginning. Boris Johnson's government, Liz Truss's government, and Rishi Sunak's government. However, there is the politics of the matter that I do not entirely understand. Right now, the Labour is said to be in a very strong position at the next general election, which rumor has it could be as early as May. It's just rumors, just talk. Sunak is denying that it's May, but my understanding is they call an election 5 weeks later, people vote. The reason I bring this up is because I don't know where the British government is for sustaining support. It's now been passed, according to the Telegraph, defense spending in Germany is now past British defense spending on supporting Ukraine. The Sunak government has been vociferous in support of Zelensky in Ukraine. So is Johnson. Keir Starmer is not reluctant, but at the same time, he needs to win an election. Can we project where the British Parliament is and where the British people are on Ukraine?
Well, you know, today is the announcement of the British annual budget by the government. And, you know, it's clearly a pre-election budget. It includes tax cuts. Yes, I mean, the promise of £5 million for Ukraine, but also, of course, in a pre-election budget, it doesn't involve cuts for social welfare or the National Health Service or whatever. I mean, you can't cut the National Health Service anymore. It's in, you know, a state of steep decline. It is actually, so many economists have said, this cannot be financed. There is just no way that Britain can do all these things without, of course, going further and further and further into debt. Especially, as you say, in circumstances where Britain is sort of basically flatlining, it's on the edge of recession. And Labour, well, you know, started by making all these promises, especially when it came to alternative energy and a Green New Deal. But actually, Labour has been cutting back and back on those. Promises to the anguish of you know, many more progressive and left wing Brits. So, the thing is, the Tories have made such a mess of things and have become so unpopular that I don't think there can be any serious question that Labour will win the next election. But I mean, the majority could be smaller than was previously predicted, also because Starmer has absolutely infuriated the Muslim population in Britain with his stance over Gaza. But Labour will win, maybe with a smaller majority than expected, but it will inherit the most unholy mess of public finances and economic policy and social welfare and health policy. And in those circumstances, we will have to see whether these promises to Ukraine can in fact be fulfilled. What I think is clear is that the existing British military and military industry cannot do so. Britain now only has 150 tanks. Unless Britain is going to strip itself bare, there are just very limited quantities that Britain can give. And building up the British armed forces, and equally importantly, of course, British military industry, that is not something that can be done in weeks or even months. This is a multi-year effort. So I think that, in terms of all its different commitments, Britain is in really serious trouble now.
Rome, Berlin, Paris, and London, all moving towards where? Is Keith listening that this is not the powerful backing of 22? Does Zelensky hear that? Do the Ukrainians hear that? That four big states want to get out of this?
Well, I mean, it's clear that they hear it. They can't help but hear it. But as so often happens in war, they have nailed themselves to, you know, that the only peace they can accept is essentially complete victory. You know, they're still talking about their 10-point peace plan, but that's not a peace plan. You know, it demands the complete withdrawal of Russia from everywhere, including Crimea, reparations, war crimes trials. You can only get that if you actually win a complete victory on the battlefield. And you know, no serious military analyst now thinks that's possible. The Biden administration certainly doesn't. But of course, people have talked themselves into a corner from which it is very difficult for them, you know, now to extract themselves. Because, you know, as I've been saying since this war began, indeed even earlier, if Ukraine could settle for independence and reasonable security in a path to the European Union, you know, with the de facto partition remaining where it is and a treaty of neutrality, in terms of not just what Putin wanted at the start of the war, but the history of the past 350 years, that would in fact be a great Ukrainian victory, a historic victory. It wouldn't be an absolute victory, but you see, I think in many ways, very foolishly, we've talked ourselves into a position where now, because of everything that we've said, that would look like a colossal defeat for Ukraine. And of course, defeat is very difficult to accept.
Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We've checked on all the capitals of Europe, except for one involved in this, and that would be Moscow when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bass.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.